You are listening to the Reality Steve podcast with your host, Reality Steve. He's got all the latest info and behind-the-scenes juice on Clayton's season of The Bachelor and interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. Now, here's Reality Steve.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to podcast number 274. I am your host, Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in. We've got a fun show for you this week. We've got two guys in the reality TV casting world from Cornwell Casting, Jason Cornwell and Damon Collazo. They are the two people, their company, Cornwell Casting, are the company that cast for Joe Millionaire. They casted Steven, they cast Kurt, and all the women. And we talk a lot about that in today's podcast. In addition to, I've never spoken to anybody in the casting world before. I don't even think I've ever spoken to anybody in the production world before, except maybe Michael Carroll. He was a producer that was interviewed for Amy Kaufman's book. And he came on. He was a former producer in the Bachelor world years ago and then did the first few seasons of Temptation Island. I think he's the only person on the production side I've ever had on. So it was really interesting having two people on that run their own casting production company. And you'll hear from Jason and Damon momentarily.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new day all-purpose cleaner cleans and kills 99.9% of viruses and bacteria on hard, non-porous surfaces around your home with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
So not a whole hell of a lot to get to in regards to the Bachelor world. If you read my column yesterday, you know that the Women Tell All is scheduled for next Wednesday in LA. And I would assume we're going to get Shanae there. And it'll be interesting to see exactly how she handles this. She's handled everything about as poorly as you can from the second the show started airing. So I guess I shouldn't expect anything different. And as I've written for the last 2 weeks regarding Shanae, even if she does get up there and is apologetic and cries, why would any of the audience believe anything she says and take her at face value? She's already shown that she can say something on TV and then take it right back in an ITM saying, you know, yay tears, and I did a great acting job, I deserve an Oscar for this. So anything she says, I'm not going to buy it. And she might not care, but I'm just giving my opinion on what kind of corner this woman has painted herself into by the way she acted on the show. Why should anybody believe her? She clearly had so many opportunities to apologize. And when she did apologize on the show, in front of the women. The second she got behind a camera and the women weren't around, she basically laughed at the fact that she apologized. So I don't know how she's going to do it. She's clearly going to be there. It would make no sense if she wasn't there. They will find a way to get her there, even if she doesn't want to. And she's like, I'm over this. I don't want to do this. No, my guess is she'll be there. But yeah, it tapes next Wednesday in LA. And, you know, hopefully I'll find out some stuff and be able to relay to you exactly what happened at the Women Tell All. But this is going to be mostly centered around what the hell Shanae did this season. A little on Cassidy, I would think. You know, they'll talk to her about what she said and the friends with benefits guy she had back home and whatnot. But that's not the story. She lasted two episodes. It's really not that big of a deal. Shanae is the person that everyone is going there for. So it'll be interesting to see which women attack her and not attack, but I mean, criticize her and ask her, what the hell are you doing? And I hope they say what I just said. I hope they say, great, Shanae, if Shanae gets up there and apologizes, I hope they say, great, but why are we supposed to believe you? And if Shanae is like, well, you don't have to believe me, but this is how I really feel. Like, it's like she's in a lose-lose. She can't win coming out of the Women Tell All. I don't see any way Shanae looks good at Women Tell All. I don't. She could get up there and cry from the second she sits down till the second she leaves. And I think a lot of us will be like, great. We saw you do that on the show. And you said you were faking the tears. And you said you were a great actress. So why should this be any different? So she's really lost all credibility by what she did on the show. And we'll see what she does on the Women Tell All, but I'm not expecting some, wow, that was a really different Shanae. I never saw this side of her. No. No. Sorry. Your credibility is shot. As for everything else, we are about a month away from the finale airing. And as I mentioned earlier this week, I don't have your winner for you. And, you know, I don't know if and when I will. But you know when I do, if I do, I will share it with everybody. There's no reason for me to hold out. I'm not holding out. I'm not like, I say it every time, but it basically just comes down to I need the confirmation that I feel comfortable with. And I just don't have that yet. Sure, I've heard it's Susie. Sure, I've heard it's Rachel. Sure, I've heard it's Gabby. Well, clearly can't be all three. But, you know, you hear other things and you're just like, okay. And once I hear something, it's like, okay. Now, I know that I've gotten emails on it and DMs on it. And this is where I want to explain to you. I've been asked numerous times, why don't you just share what you know or what you've been told? And I said, do you realize what a horrible position that puts me in? Because the second I just share what I've heard, it's going to lead to so many more questions because what I've heard isn't any sort of finality to anything. It isn't like, oh, this happened, which then led to this and this and this. If I just say what I've heard, you're going to have so many more follow-up questions. You'll be frustrated that I told you what I heard because you'll be like, that didn't give us anything. Exactly. That's why I haven't said anything. That's the whole point. Like, it doesn't make any sense to just share with you what I've heard because what I've heard is just pretty much nothing I can confirm. I hear a lot of things, but I only report the stuff that I believe I have confirmed in my own way, whether it be double sourced or triple sourced or from a source that is only one person telling me, but I know that person knows what they're talking about. So it varies from season to season. There's no rhyme or reason to every single thing that I've posted as a spoiler over the years. Sometimes it's double sourced. Sometimes it's triple sourced. Sometimes it's one source that, based on who they are and what they told me and or what they showed me, I know it's true. For this season, for Clayton, it's just been a lot of, I'm hearing this. And then as I'm, you know, trying to vet out what they're hearing, it turns into, okay, well, how did you hear that? Who did you hear that from? Does that person have any reason to lie? And I just haven't gotten the solid answers that I'm looking for. And that's it. That's really all it is. I'm looking for the confirmation. I say it every season, but it seems to go over people's heads because I keep getting DMs about, why don't you share it? And I'm not going to just share what I hear. If I did that, I'd be sharing stuff literally every single day. And then it just becomes just gossip and speculation, and then it turns into Reality Steve is reporting. Even if I say I'm hearing it, it turns into Reality Steve reported this. And then when it doesn't come true because it isn't something that was actually confirmed, I just ran with anything told to me, kind of like Dumois, then it's like, well, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, yeah, because I gave you something that wasn't even confirmed. But, hey, you wanted it, so, yeah, I'm just not going to do that. It's just not something that I'm interested in. I'm not interested in posting speculation or gossip or whatever. I'll leave that to the Instagram accounts and the gossip mongers on TikTok. Let them do that. That's not what I'm doing. I'm trying to find out who won the show and who he picked and what's been happening post-show and are they together or what's going to happen at the After the Final Rose. And you know, I've heard a few things, and I'm just trying to get it confirmed. That's all I can do. So, without any further ado, let's get going. You're going to like this one. Podcast number 274.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll be inviting everyone over. From barbecues to girls' night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy, the way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
All right, let's bring them in. They've casted contestants on some of your favorite reality shows like Joe Millionaire, Millionaire Matchmaker, X on the Beach, Kate Plus Date, so many others. From Cornwell Casting, a reality TV casting company based in L.A., it's Jason Cornwell and Damon Collazo. Thank you guys for coming on. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Before we dive into some background stuff, I'll start with you, Jason, since you are the head of Cornwell Casting. Your role at Cornwell and what you're responsible for doing, reality TV casting company, what does that entail?
First, let me say that Damon is my partner. So we're both heads of the company.
Gotcha.
So it's just got my name on it because I named it before Damon and I became partners. And then we were afraid to change the name. But we basically get a call from a network or a production company, and they'll say, hey, we've got 10 episodes. We're shooting in 4 months, and we need you to go find X, Y, and Z. And we'll, you know, give them a budget and give them a plan, and then we'll start the search for the cast. Like Joe Millionaire is a good example because it was a long casting. You know, we had to take a long time to find the guys. The women were a challenge too as well. Ben can speak to this as well, but it was like we really wanted to find high quality women that if we were that age and we were single, that we would consider women to take home to your parents. So we were looking for high quality women, and the men had to be, you know, obviously the men had to be a lot of things, but they had to be able to play a millionaire, and they also had to be able to play blue collar, and they both had to be convincing, but most important, they had to get along. And we were very pleasantly surprised at their little bromance that formed. But it wasn't by accident. It wasn't by accident. It was, we really were looking for a long time for two dudes we thought would get along.
Okay, so here could be just an ignorant question. Does the show reach out to numerous casting companies and basically whoever delivers the two guys that they end up going with, or they're like, hey, we're hiring you and we're only going with you, and Cornwell Casting is responsible for all of Joe Millionaire?
Oh, yeah. It's one company.
One company. Okay.
Yeah, one company. I mean, they spend – they'll put all their trust in you. I mean, you don't get a show like Joe Millionaire unless you've done a lot of shows and you've delivered a lot of cast in – you know, in depending on the genre you're aiming for, you need some credentials for them to feel confident about it. But the truth is we were hired by Fox before the production company was hired. And we had done two shows for Fox recently. We had done a game show called Mental Samurai, and we had done another game show called Cherries Wild. But one of the producers over at Fox was somebody we had worked with on Millionaire Matchmaker for multiple seasons back in the day. And actually, Damon was very close with him because Damon was going to set and working with him. And now he's at Fox, so he knew the types of daters we could go out and find, and he knew that we were like a dog to a bone. We didn't let go until we got it done.
So Damon, when I spoke with Kurt and Steven about a month ago and talking about the show, they both said, like, yeah, they just reached out to me on Instagram, I think is how they got contacted by you guys. So how do you find someone like a Kurt and Steven, and what exactly were you looking for? Like, why did you fire off an email to those two guys out of numerous guys on the internet you could have?
Yeah, good question. I mean, ultimately, you know, he was it was McBee was promoting his beef jerky, and it just so happened we came across his feed. Mm. And one of our casting producers, Chad, found him and reached out to him. It was just as simple as a DM saying, hey, we're doing a show. We love your look. We love your style. We love what you're all about. I mean, it's hard to come across a millionaire farmer. I mean, at age 26, handsome, single, sane, you know, so many variables. Obviously, you can't tell a lot of those things from just video and pictures, but he was pretty active on his social media. And so we thought, okay, this guy's pretty resourceful. He's a hard worker, it appears. He gets his hands dirty. And so we love the dynamic of someone who could come in and who's never opened up a bottle of champagne or knew what, you know, body was to a glass of wine. You know, but yet, you know, he's rolling around in a Range Rover and flying in a helicopter. So we love that dynamic and thought he was a great catch for us, but ultimately, you know, we found him so early in the game that and not only that, but he was a willing participant. He wanted to be involved with it. And I think something that a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of fear mongering going on when it comes to casting shows. Oh, don't do it because it's going to make you look bad. They're going to make you look bad. They're going to put words in your mouth. They're going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so ultimately, you know, we were very upfront with Steven from the very beginning. And, you know, there was a lot of trust involved, numerous conversations that Jason had with him along with myself. And so, you know, there's a lot of trust, especially when you find someone so early on and you're going 6 months of casting. And the same for Kurt. We just reached out his DM, thought he was a good looking guy. He seemed like he'd be the right kind of fit. And we wanted these guys to get along. We loved that they were both kind of in the blue collar world. That worked out. And plus they were about the same height. So that worked too.
Yeah. I know that was a thing for them in the first episode to make sure. I think Steven was the one that was like, I hope this guy isn't, you know, 5 inches taller than me. So for a little
bit, we had some average Joes that were 5 to 6 to 7 inches taller. You know, he's a good 6'1", but we had some average Joes that were really tall. So that had to be considered because they needed to be equally attractive, you know, in different ways. But yeah, they needed to be equal in every way we could possibly match them up in. And that became even more clear when they started shooting the show.
So the show was specific about we can't have guys that are, you know, I don't know if they gave an inch difference, but no more than 2 inches taller than the other one. I mean,
they didn't really give us that. Yeah, I guess that's kind of like what we assumed, you know.
But it was a logistical, right? It was a logistical thing. I mean, you can't have somebody who's 4 inches taller because you can't get them in the frame,
yeah,
you know, in the shot. And so it would just, you know, from a logistical standpoint, you know, spending so many years on set, and you see, you know, you just see these things that you organically know, like, okay, we can't put a 5'10 guy with a 6'5 guy. Just not going to work.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was just kind of one of those deals where we knew we had to match these guys up. So hence why, you know, it was a self-imposed challenge per se. We had plenty of great candidates early on, but we knew we were looking quick match, and we really needed these guys to blend well together, because as Jason mentioned, our goal was really for these two guys to get along. And I think some of that fear that I mentioned earlier, some of these guys had, is, well, I don't want to be going up against somebody. And it was, we were very, very upfront about that. We want you guys to get along. We two guys, you know, going through this, experience together, this journey together of finding love. We want you guys to bond and really confide in one another. And that seemed to have you know, paid off in spades so far.
Again, I'm very new to this in terms of the behind the scenes work of a casting production company here. When this show is all set to go and everyone's out in Atlanta and they're about to film, are you part of this process at all? Or once you cast this show, you guys have nothing to do with it? Did you ever go out to Atlanta and watch the filming or no?
It varies, Damon. I'll let you take this one, but because he can speak to the being on set, but it varies for every show. It depends. Like on this one, once they were in Atlanta, we were done.
Okay.
But getting them to Atlanta, everything is up to us until they get on the plane and arrive. And then they're in production's hands. But that can be different on a show. And Damon has been on set for many shows. You can speak to that.
Yeah. In a nutshell, it depends on the show. I mean, Mental Samurai with Rob, you know, Rob Lowe was the host on that game show. We had some team members fly to set and sort of help, you know, wrangle the talent. And, you know, we're a friendly face that the talent knows. So we like to extend that opportunity to productions. Sometimes they want it, sometimes they don't. In this case, they didn't need it. You know, Sally Ann was really gracious about like so many things. And, you know, we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for, you know, just the amount of work, that tireless amount of hours that were put in into just the casting, which was great in so many ways and showed a lot of solidarity. But at the end of the day, they didn't need us there, and that was fine. But as Jason said, you know, getting people on planes to go somewhere to spend 6 weeks, you know, and you really don't know exactly, you've never had this kind of experience, is a little bit of a leap of faith for people. And so, you know, you have to almost have some people, you have to walk them to the actual airport, you know, just so they'll get on that plane.
Well,
and then walk them back when they decide not to fly, and then talk them back into it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
just keep them sane.
When I had Jenny on the podcast a couple weeks ago, she said, I missed my first flight. And
But by the way, Steve, that was a great interview.
You
really handled that subject matter.
Yeah, it was a good interview.
With grace, and it was great. And Jenny's great, but Jenny is the person I'm thinking of, and I can speak to it only because she's already mentioned it.
Yeah,
but she did. I was actually spending time with my family that day, and I was supposed to go to this event, and we're out at a friend's house, and I get a call, and it's like Jenny didn't get on the plane. So Damon had to help out with this too, but it was just a matter of finding out, calling her, getting her on the phone and talking to her. And, you know, we didn't really know everything about what had gone down with her. We knew some of it, but we hadn't dove too far into it. So not knowing what she's going through at the time, you just have to be an ear and you have to listen. And then as a casting director, and as a casting company, you don't want to lie to people. You want to be honest with them. So we're being straight up with her. And I think that's what, in the end, got her on the plane. Because we told her the truth. We said, if you go to Atlanta and you decide that you don't want to do the show, you can leave. You can fly to Atlanta. You can meet the producers. You can meet everybody. And if you still have this same feeling that you're having right now, you can leave. And once we said that, she got on her flight and she left. We said, trust us to get you there. If you don't want to stay, You don't trust them. Get on a plane and go home. No harm, no foul. Mm. She got on the plane.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed talking to her. I had no idea about that story until I started doing a dive on it on the internet. And, you know, it was just, you know, just, it was just the curiosity in me. I really like the human interest stories to do nowadays, because, you know, when you're a contestant, you're one of 25 or 30 contestants. You know, I basically cover Bachelor and Bachelorette. And, you know, when you're one of 25, 30 contestants, it's very hard for your story to get out there unless you last long in the show. We know this. And so, as I've always said, everyone's got a story. Some are more interesting than others. Clearly, when she said that to Steven on the first date, I had no idea about her, anything about her. And the second she said that, I was like, huh, this is interesting. Did a little Googling, DM'd her at the end of the show and said, I'd love to have you come on. And then she said, yeah. And I was like, okay, let me dive a little further. And then I saw what it was all about. And I was like, okay, this is something that is, one, is topical. And two, she was, you know, the spearhead of this lawsuit. So,
again, though, Steve, you got to, that goes to the credit. A lot of that is Jenny willing to talk about it. And then you've got a lot of things in between Jenny saying it and then making it to air. You've got the production, Sally Ann and 495, making the decision to cut that into the show and to keep that. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Fox agreeing to that and saying, this is a story we all want to tell. So once she says it, there are a lot of times and places where stories like that don't get out. They might not be relevant, or it might be something that the network doesn't want to address, or the production company thinks is a Debbie Downer moment. But to their credit, they heard that. They said, this is a story we should tell. And they aired it, and she got a voice. And she is a voice for women going through this, for people going through this. So it's like three or four people have to approve and agree that we're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
And I was very pleasantly surprised, because so many times the stories like that just don't get told.
Yeah. And I, like I said, if Fox doesn't allow it and I never hear that, then I have no reason to reach out to Jenny at the end of that. Mm-hmm. And she never comes on the podcast, because I don't know anything about her other than, oh, she had a first date with Steven. It went, you know, they watched an opera. It's like, okay, great. I mean, so I'm glad that it all came out. But yeah, there are layers to it that I didn't really even think of, other than, yeah, she can say it, but if the show chooses not to air it, then how is anyone ever going to know about it? So
exactly.
A little background, Jason, for people that don't know, you were on season 6 of The Real World, which was Real World Boston, which I never saw. I think I jumped in the Real World train on Hawaii, which was season 8. And then I watched pretty religiously after that. I know it was a while ago, but kind of walk us through, after that ended, how you moved on into the world of reality TV casting and working for Bunman Murray Productions and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. I did the show. I realized, unfortunately, while I was on the show, that I would prefer to be behind the scenes. But I've made it through the show, finished it. And I was back from Boston. I think I was living, I was just doing a little vacation time back home in Arkansas. And I got a call from Mary Ellis Bunim, and she wanted me to come out to LA and do some on-camera interviews with some of the contestants for the next season of Real World. So she basically wanted me to take the girls on dates and see how they reacted and see if they were cool under pressure. And so I flew out and I took some of these women on dates just around LA and just interviewed them sort of, you know, real easy. I was nervous. I was probably as nervous as they were, because I, you know, didn't know what I was doing, but I liked it enough that I asked her for a job. And so I was working at Bunim Murray when my show was airing on MTV, and I just stayed. I stayed there. I cast the first season you saw. I was one of the casting directors on Real World Hawaii. I found Tech and Ruth and Justin, and, you know, everybody had a part in that. Those were my golden children. Mm. Tech was the funniest person I'd ever interviewed in my life. I'm like, this guy has got to get on the show. And so I had an interesting perspective. I had a perspective that at the time nobody had, which was somebody who had recently been on a show, who was now able to talk to people about what it was like, and kind of what works. Because I had just been there and I knew what worked and what didn't work, or at least I had an idea. I thought I did. And so I stuck around Bunim Murray for a couple of years, and I worked a whole bunch of different jobs, and then eventually just went out on my own and when I found Damon, I had just formed my company, and it's the rest is just a bunch of shows in between now and then.
Damon, you came over from scripted television to join Jason at Cornwell, right? First, did you do that?
Yeah.
Okay, so first off, tell us how you guys met and kind of what brought you. I know you had mentioned before we popped on here about you did some acting work. You had some bit parts and bit roles in TV shows and whatnot. What brought you out of the scripted world into reality TV?
Well, I think, you know, like many of us, you know, the necessity of you know, finding a steady paying job, you know, the scripted thing was obviously appealing to me, but I only knew it from being in front of the camera. And, you know, I'd done some pretty decent stuff and was living off my acting. But it came to a point where I think I needed a little more stability. And I had actually cast a couple of shows prior to meeting Jason for Three Ball, who had done, you know, The Biggest Loser, Beauty and the Geek, which I had done. So I'd got a few things under my belt, and then a colleague of ours had introduced us, thought we would be, you know, a good fit just as far as, you know, working together. There was no intent of, you know, being a partner in the beginning, but Jason and I met at a Starbucks one day and we hit it off. He was from the South, I'm from Texas. And so we hit it off, and, I mean, we immediately started working, and, I mean, our first really big gig was Tough Love. That was a great franchise, and it did really well and probably would have kept going if it wasn't for, you know, a little bit of a mishap, which I won't get into, but, it had nothing to do with us. We've just kind of been known as the, you know, the guys that do hard dating shows.
There's more to that story.
Damon was
an assistant. He came in as an assistant casting director, but my main casting director that was working that show kept leaving at like 5 o'clock. I'm not going to mention any names. She kept leaving because she had another project, and Damon was the only one that stuck around and worked until late in the night. So I knew then and there that this guy was a hard worker and he had a great eye for talent, and we were casting the pilot for Tough Love. So we got the pilot done and it was awesome. And then we did, you know, I don't know, subsequently like 4 seasons. I don't know how many seasons the show went, but from that point on, all you're looking for in casting are people that will work as hard as you will and harder at times, and people that are really good talking and really good at interviews. And eventually everybody develops kind of an instinct for it. And he was all those things. So I was like, I'm keeping this guy. And so he just came in and started running things with me, and the rest is history.
So I imagine a lot of changes in the industry since you first started to where we are now. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realized how big and lucrative the reality genre would be. So, I mean, Jason, tell us the biggest difference, I guess, that you see between casting in 2006 when you started this company versus casting in 2022.
I'd say the most obvious difference is that everything is virtual now. We used to have, you know, almost a 2,000 square foot office space in Santa Monica. That was our first official office space where, you know, we had parking for people to come in and we would interview people. We would meet everybody face to face. They would come into our office, do an interview in a chair with a camera and lights. Now everything, even pre-pandemic, is done by Zoom. Which is great because we can get the same quality interview over Zoom as we could making people drive to see us. We can get a feel for them. We can interview anybody, anywhere at the drop of a hat. And we can schedule casting directors to be doing interviews, you know, every hour on the hour. So we get a lot more contestants through. The streamers are great. The Amazons, the Netflixes, the HBO Maxes, all of them are in the business of reality now. So we weren't really sure if they were going to be in that business, but they are definitely coming on board. And the demand for content is as high or higher than it was then. It was really high in 2006, 2005, 6, 7, and then 8. Everything dropped off when the bottom fell out of everything. And it's just been growing and growing. I mean, there are, at least for the top casting companies, which I'm really not sure how many companies there are that are can scale up as quickly as we can. There's, you know, probably 4. Business can be very, very good. It's feast or famine in our business. You're either working as much as you possibly can, or you're waiting for the next job, or you're doing four jobs at once. It's up and down, but you know, it's been very good for the past 3 years.
Damon, what about the contestants themselves? Because it seems like, obviously, I mean, I think the biggest thing now is with social media and knowing that, hey, I just need to get out there on a show watched by, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, you know, to build my brand, to gain followers. I mean, it is a thing, whether people want to accept it or not. You know, especially with the Bachelor and Bachelorette world, it's like, are they there for the right reasons? Well, I don't know if anybody in 2022 now is. I mean, they're all looking to either get famous or build a brand or sell something or whatever. I don't even think there's anything wrong with that anymore. Maybe 5 years ago I did, but now I everyone's got an ulterior motive versus, oh, I'm really actually interested in what the show has to offer versus me personally. Or am I off on that?
No, I think you're on point. I think the landscape has changed dramatically. I mean, when, you know, back in 2006 to maybe a few years ago, you know, people were skeptical of getting on a reality show in fear that it might taint their brand. What you're seeing now is this crossover of so many different, you know, whether it's social media, television, film, anything to get their name out there, they're considering. So, you know, while some may say, hey, you know, I am doing it for love, and that may be their truth, I mean, I think anybody who's looking to, you know, be on television would be lying if they said that they weren't hopefully going to benefit from it in the long run.
Yeah.
If they find love, great. That's why they're there. But if they also get, you know, acquire 100,000 followers on their TikTok or their Instagram, I mean, which happens, which is very, very possible. You know, and I, you know, after talking to Steven and Kurt recently, I mean, they've certainly seen an uptick in their social media. So following. So I, yeah, it's hard to really discern whether somebody, because we do go into it with the intentions of wanting people to be there for the right reasons, which is love. You know, and some people have said, I, you know, truthfully, I'm just here to get my numbers up. And we usually don't consider them. And that's kind of a behind the scenes statement. I mean, we rarely, you know, whatever, believe it or not, there are some scruples in reality television, and that's one of them. You know, if we feel like you're not truthfully there for the right reason, or at least most of the reason, then it's really hard for us to, we have to be convinced that you're there for the right reason. So you can convince us, then, you know, we think that you can convince America, and either you're, you know, best actor in the world, or you're authentic in your intentions.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like now, after hearing you say that, if some future contestant for any reality show is listening, it's almost like, hey, even if you don't believe in the show that you want to be on and you're looking to build a brand and gain followers, just don't say it. Just fake it till you make it. Like, just don't tell Jason and Damon directly, yeah, I'm looking to build a brand here. I'm looking for followers. I don't really care about the show. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like they can get through it. Now, Jason, when you were on reality TV, this wasn't a thing. There was no Twitter. There was no Instagram. Yeah. I don't even think Facebook was around. No, it definitely wasn't around then.
No, it wasn't.
When you cast regular people now that are coming in, can you tell? You guys have been doing this for a long time. So now that you've built it up, and now we're in 2022, where you've had about 5 or 6 years to where the social media boom post-show is now a thing, and it could become your full-time job, can you tell right away who's actually interested in whatever the show is about, or whether or not they're strictly looking to get famous? Or honestly, does it even matter at this point? You're just looking for a good cast member.
Yeah. I mean, look, they're not mutually exclusive, Steve, honestly. It's like they could be an influencer and they could be in it to get their numbers up. But we can usually tell if it's a dating show, if they're genuinely going after love. That is our goal. We don't truly care. Sometimes it's a plus to have your numbers be pretty good, because maybe we found you through social media. You know, maybe that's the way we got to you. I don't know. But if we get them in interviews, and there's multiple interviews. There's an interview with the, let's go through the process real quick. So
yeah,
we find you, we reach out to you. It could be a casting associate. They tell you what the show is. You agree to do an interview. And then the next stage is you interview with the casting director. And that casting director then does an hour interview. Sometimes it's an hour, 30 minutes to an hour. We edit that. We look at it. Then Damon and me and Sandra, whoever's at the top of the company, looks at that and goes, this person's legit. We pitch it to the network. The network and the production company, and they make it past that phase. Then there's another set of interviews in which we get on the phone with that person and we ask them some key questions. And we're trying to get who they are, their real self out. Are they really looking to fall in love? What does that look like? What are they looking to come on and date somebody? Are they open to this process? And it's not just genuine, like whether or not they're looking to fall in love. It's, can they be genuine on camera? I think Damon and I think we've said this about 100,000 times. It's like, if a person who can't help but be themselves is a person we want on the show. And I don't mean your forced self, not the self you think you want to project, the self you really are. If you can't help but be that person, then you're right for a show. It might not be this one, or it might be this one, but we're going to give you a shot at it. And, you know, if you fit all the other criteria.
That's interesting. I mean, Damon, with so many reality shows now, we kind of see all the same types of characters on each show, whether it's, you know, Dancing with the Stars always has an athlete, an Olympian, a Disney person, a political figure, a newsmaker. Like, every season, you kind of know who's going to be on Dancing with the Stars, just not the name. You know kind of the background of it. Do you find that more shows are wanting people to fit characters to a show, or no? I mean, it's hard to see. We kind of just see it with every show. I bring it back to The Bachelor and Bachelorette. It's like, okay, here's the person that you know is going to be uncomfortable being around a bunch of other women. Here's the one that's the drinker that's going to get drunk on the first night. It just seems like we always see it, and it's like, that can't be a coincidence. Or maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's some of that going on. I think diversity can mean a lot of things. You know, when you're making your wish list for a show, you want to have variety in there. So you want someone who's going to go in there and maybe stir the pot, or, you know, be the loud talker in the room. Someone who maybe is a little more reserved, but still will speak their mind. I mean, ultimately, yes, we do have these little buckets that we like to fill, but I think that there's no real, you find these great people and you say, this person has a story to tell. And sometimes, you know, they're really loud when you meet them. And then when they get in on the show, they're maybe not as loud. So, you know, you never know until they all get together what kind of dynamic you're going to get. But ultimately, yes, we do want a variety of people in there. If everybody was the same, it's just a bunch of loud people talking over loud people. So to answer your question, yes, we do go with the intention of trying to find different people to fill the slots, if you will.
Well, and that also goes to, like, I think, I don't know what shows, we don't have to mention names, but there are some shows out there that are pretty formulaic in the way they cast the shows.
Yeah.
They've got a formula. It works. People love it. They've got good numbers. And until their numbers start dropping off, they're not really going to change that formula too much. And we all know those shows, and, you know, they do great business. You really do get creative when you've got a show coming in, because, you know, this version of Joe Millionaire had never been done before. It was a whole different format, had a name everybody recognized, but we got the time and we got the chance to really go out and try to find different women than you would see on a normal dating show, in the sense that we got a lot of women that we looked at, a lot of women we interviewed, and we got to really pick the ones we thought were going to, A, get along with each other, and B, it wasn't just going to be a massive competition. It was going to be, they're going to actually question, you know, I think I love them, or I don't think I love them. And then the same thing with the guys. So it wasn't a formula. We were creating the formula.
You know, we're 20 years into reality TV being a thing, and I've always said, it just seems like, what is there left to do in reality TV? How many different ideas are there still left out there? And I've always said to this day that the best reality show that I ever saw, produced, the way it came off, was the Joe Schmo Show season one. I thought it was the best thing that could ever be put on. Like, it was perfect. It was because it was in the early stages of reality TV to where you could fool somebody like that. Nowadays, I don't think you could pull off the Joe Schmo show. It just, people would be way too skeptical. The second they're signing on, they'd be like, what am I signing on for? Whatever the case may be. And you brought up, you know, when you're talking about interviewing the people, you're telling them what the show is. Speaking with both Steven and Kurt and Jenny, all of them were told this show is called Love for Real. Like, you weren't even allowed to tell them this was Joe Millionaire. Yeah. And it's because, you know, Joe Millionaire was something that was, the first season was, you know, back in 2002 or 2003. I don't know if you know this, but Joe Millionaire is what started RealitySteve.com. It was the first show because I was just a guy. I was 5 years out of college, just liked watching TV, and Fox had the NFL, and they started promoting a show where we were in the early stages of reality TV, but we had never seen something where they were literally doing a prank, and they were going to trick women into thinking a guy was worth $300 million when he made 20 grand a year. And I was like, I got to watch this. And so Joe Millionaire started, and I sent an email after every episode to three of my friends with just basically ramblings and my thoughts on, because when I saw the commercials, I was like, I can't believe the women are going to fall for this. Like, what's going to happen? Is she really going to be interested in him, or the fact that he's possibly worth $300 million? And I sent it out to three of my friends. They forwarded it on to people who then forwarded it on to people. And then I had an email list running, and it got up to about 300 people. Can I be on your Joe Millionaire email list? And I'm like, okay. And then Joe Millionaire ends, and they send like, we think these are funny. We love these. What's the next show you're going to do? And I'm like, well, I don't know. What's the next dating show popping up in that time frame? And it happened to be the first season of The Bachelorette. And then from there, it took off. But yeah, Joe Millionaire is kind of what started everything. And I was always wondering, could they bring this show back? Because it's, you're tricking people. And you're like, how would they not know? And this was the way they did it. We're like, hey, we're going to have two guys from the very get-go, and we're going to tell you in the first episode. One of these guys is the millionaire, and one of them isn't. Yeah. So the whole thing was pretty fascinating. But the fact that you, obviously you were told by the production company, you can't tell these people, Steven, Kurt, any of the women, this is Joe Millionaire. So do they, I don't think anyone's mad at you, but do they feel like, oh, if I would have known this, maybe I wouldn't have done it? Or why weren't you allowed to say Joe Millionaire?
Well, the cat they didn't want to get the cat out of the bag. Okay. Honestly, it was a huge, it was a big deal for Fox to bring this back and try to recreate it. Yeah. So, I mean, casting is pretty hamstrung on the shows if it's not a show that's already got a following. So you're never going to be able to go out and have a casting call that says, hey, we're casting for the new Joe Millionaire. Because first of all, the women would have known. The surprise on that first episode when the women were introduced to two men, that was worth every secret we had to keep, right?
Yep, yep.
But we don't lie. We didn't lie to the women. We told them as much of the truth as we possibly could, which is we're casting a show called Love for Real, which is something Damon and I and Sondra just made up at the very beginning of casting because it sounded kind of cool. We thought it was a good name. We're like, if I was going to create a dating show, it'd be a good name. And we told them the truth. I mean, everything we said, and we have to be really clear about this, everything we said was true. When we were talking and interviewing the women, we did not lie, because I don't honestly think in 2021, 2022 that you could do the original version of Joe Millionaire.
No.
I think that it would be perceived as sexist. I think it would be perceived as predatory in some way. I just don't, not that it was back when it came out. I just think it would be looked at like, oh my God, they're just lying to 20 women. I don't think that that plays on television the same way it did back then when it was brand new. So it had to have an honesty to it. And, you know, the men, all the men knew was that they weren't going to be alone. That's what we told the other guy. That's what we told Steve. That's what we told Kurt. It's like, you're not going to be alone. You're not going to be the only guy. They didn't necessarily know what the twist was going to be, but we knew they were going to be cool with it.
Yeah.
The women, we also knew they were going to be, it was going to be better. I mean, what we were presenting to them was basically, it's just like The Bachelor, without saying that name. So the pleasant surprise came when there were two men to choose from.
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, it's just different times. Yeah. You couldn't have pulled this off in 2022, the original version. of it. And, you know, trick, like I said, anything involving playing a prank or tricking a whole cast is just, it couldn't go over nowadays just because I think people are just way more skeptical because we've had 20 years of reality television shows out there where it seems like every idea has been brought forward. Like, what else could there be out there?
I mean, David spoke to this earlier, but think about this. We had to find a millionaire who did not have a large social following.
Yeah.
I mean, like, imagine you go onto this show, you're one of the women, kind of like what happened with, who was it that knew who Stephen was? Caroline?
Caroline, yeah.
No.
Yeah, Caroline.
Yeah, yeah. Caroline Campbell. Yeah, she, like, we had to find a guy who did not have a large social media following, or the whole thing would have been blown from the very beginning. And we vetted Caroline Campbell. Vetted our social media, vetted every single thing we could, and she still knew who he was.
Yeah.
And that was surprising to all of us, but it, you know, unfortunately for her, it didn't work to have her on the show, but it played well on TV. And, you know, I think she's probably okay with it now.
You know, Damon, you mentioned earlier about a couple of the shows that you done. What was the one? Joker's Wild, right? That was another one? Or, not Joker.
No, we did... are you talking about a game show or
yeah.
a
game show?
Dating show.
Game show.
So we've done Cherry's Wild.
Cherry's Wild.
Game show. Yeah, Cherry's Wild and Mental Samurai with Rob Lowe.
Okay, so there's obviously a difference between casting a dating show versus a game show and a type of contestant that you're looking for on that. When you're casting a game show contestant, just as a viewer of TV and game shows on reality TV, it seems like you have to cast somebody who is either just super enthusiastic or has to act super enthusiastic. Because I've never seen a game show contestant that is just like, yeah, okay, I'll keep playing or whatever. They are over the top enthusiastic. I'm assuming that's the biggest quality you have to go for?
The difference from a... we laugh about it because, you know, if you can cast a dating show, you can... You know, and this is no offense to anybody that does never cast a dating show, but I think those who have cast a big dating shows will tell you that casting dating shows is a more challenging than doing a game show, simply because you have to find the people, you have to hunt after those people that you want on a dating show. Whereas a game show, you put it out there, and people are like, I want to win money.
Yeah.
How do I get on a game show? So. Yes, you are looking for exuberance. You're looking for enthusiastic people who, you know, have some sensibility about them, but are going to go out there and I think one of the very underrated qualities that people need to have is they need to have a level of comfort on set, because when you have so many cameras, you know, shooting at you, you have lights, you're on a stage, there's maybe an audience, obviously pre-COVID, you know, you have to be able to sort of deliver the goods, you know, you have to be a personality up there. So there's a, you know, there's a little bit of a arduous process to making sure these people are going to, you know, have a good time up there on the stage. We just tell them, say, hey, look, just be yourself and have a good time. So when we're looking for somebody for a game show, ultimately they need to be as comfortable as possible, because that's the only way it's going to work.
They can't so help but be themselves.
Yeah.
Well, I know it is interesting, and I, you know, watch game shows and I watch, clearly reality TV dating shows have been my forte for years, mostly Bachelor and Bachelorette, but I watch the other ones. I've seen them. I've seen all the different variations of a type of dating show where it ultimately always centers around either one lead or two leads and a bunch of contestants competing for that person. It's just a matter of, you know, how dates go, how eliminations go, what the wording is that they use, but it's all kind of, you know, the same thing. It's just a bunch of men and or women competing for a one woman or one man or, you know, two. But, you know, I think now with casting and, you know, the boom of social media, viewers seem to be complaining all the time about, oh, all they want is, you know, all these influencers are on all these, you know, the only way to get cast is because you're an influencer now. But I think that's totally backwards. I don't even really see it that way. If that were the case, then every contestant on these shows would be going in with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers ever before they step foot on the show. And the data just shows that's just not the case. They build it once they're on the show and then become influencers. So I'm sure that's something that when you guys do it, are you told specifically by any production companies that we don't want people who are already at 100,000 or 500,000?
No. It's never discussed, really. Okay. Honestly, it's never something that a network or a production company brings up to us. It's the task is the same. Go out and find the best people for this show. The parameters are laid down. You know, they need to be roughly from this age to this age, although, you know, any age can really get on a show in theory. And they just need to fit into what we're creating. So if they want to come on and they want to play ball, they can go and they can audition for the show and they might make it on the show. But it's really, there's never a mention of social media. That's always a surprise to us. You know, we might find them easier on social media if they have a large following, but honestly, it could be somebody who's got two followers. It doesn't matter if they can speak to the camera and they can express themselves and we have fun in an interview with them, you know, depending on what we're looking for, of course. But for Joe Millionaire, are they comfortable in front of the camera? I mean, look at a great example would be Suzette James from Joe Millionaire. She, I think, had the largest following going into the show. She had quite a few people on Instagram, maybe Twitter. I don't know about TikTok so much, but, you know, but that girl is she's a dynamo. She is such a natural in front of the camera, but also was really into the show and really went for the right reasons. So if anything, her social media following would make us think she's only doing this for her following. But after we interviewed her many, many times, we all said, this girl's legit. Like, she just happens to be a soundbite machine. I mean, it's not a mistake that you see her on almost every episode before she got booted, that, you know, they were going back to her and what she was saying, and because she's so good in front of a camera. She's an example of somebody who's 100% themselves, 100% natural, and it works for that show. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if it didn't spin off, if she didn't have her own. If somebody is smart and somebody out there is thinking about this, you know, let's find love for her. Let's give her own show. Let's have her be the lead on a show. She's that good.
Yeah, I mean, I thought she was great, and she got a lot of time for somebody that never got a one-on-one date, but they did show a lot of her ITMs, confessionals, whatever you want to call them, because she was good TV. And we, you know, we get that a lot, and I think people kind of run with it about, well, are we promoting bad behavior when we highlight, you know, women like, you know, Shanae on The Bachelor this season, who is putting someone's ADHD diagnosis down and making fun of it and stuff like that. And, oh, they only focus on the drama and stuff like that. But, you know, again, as I say to them every season, like, look, I know people maybe get tired of the drama and the cattiness between the women on The Bachelor, or if you're watching The Bachelorette, the men fighting and drama and who said this. But let's be honest. If everyone in the house got along, you would think it's the most boring show in America. Like, it's going to...
Well,
it would.
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, like, do you think that on Joe Millionaire, I mean, the women, we don't have a lot of catfighting.
No.
Like, you know, it's not these... There are people that are, you know, separating themselves a little bit from the rest of the women by their behavior. But for the most part, they're getting along. They're like these cool girl crews that are supporting each other, and the show still works.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I think it works. I'm watching it, and I don't know what's going to happen. We don't know once we turn the cast over what the result's going to be, but they're keeping me tuning in every single week.
Yeah, it seems.
What
like,
do you think?
It seems like this is and even just looking at some of them on social media post show, they're hanging out and, you know, very friendly with each other. It really seems that the only person, if you want to cast her as a quote-unquote villain or who has gotten a villain edit, would be Carolyn. And it's not like Carolyn is shit-talking any of the other women. She's just kind of isolated herself as, hey, I'm here for Kurt. I don't want Kurt. You know, I'm getting a little jealous that Kurt gives attention to other women, which would be natural, I think, in that process. How can you have to understand, you're going into a dating show. it's one thing to be like, I know he's dating other women, and then to see it in front of your eyes with, you know, you were just making out with him on a bus and now Amanda is sitting on his lap. Yeah, that's going to probably get under your skin a little bit, but some people take it better than others.
I love Amanda. I love Amanda Pace.
Yeah.
I love all the girls. I love all the women on the show, but I had a special place in my heart for Amanda.
I think Amanda's great. And I've spoken to her on DM and she'll be on the podcast once this is all said and done. I don't know how things end up with her. Just watching the first, you know, six episodes, I think it's pretty clear she's making it for, you know, it's between for Kurt. It seems like, and I could be wrong, it seems like this is coming down to a choice between Carolyn and Amanda. So whether or not Amanda wins or whether or not she's the one that maybe he chooses Carolyn over her, I don't know, but I definitely want to have her on because I think she's a ball of energy and totally different than Carolyn, which is really cool to watch Kurt, you know, kind of fall for two women that, based on what we've seen on television, are really different from each other.
Very. And, you know, she's got a secret, too. You know, I think they're teasing it on the, you know, what's coming up. But there's a lot of layers to Amanda Pace.
Yeah.
We'll find out more about her.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting coming up.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
Steve, the one thing that you mentioned I thought was interesting is that, you know, these girls are different from each other. And I think that was really the goal, was to make sure that we felt like that the girls, you know, would feel different, be different and identify. I think accessibility, you know, for women watching it was important, that there was somebody on the cast that they felt they could identify with. I mean, Andrea is a good example of that. She's a self-made girl, you know, and she, while she didn't really connect with, you know, one of the guys, she still brought her individuality. And I thought there was a really nice moment with her and Jenny. And, you know, she represented a contingency of women that, you know, can identify with her. Annie, another example, you know, a lot of people really identify with Annie. Brianna, I mean, she's, you know, certainly had her challenges, but, you know, I think a lot of people, the moment, you know, the tender moment with Martin and the, in the tent.
Yeah.
You know, was really, really good. So I think there's just a level of, like, we are trying to make an effort to have some level of diversity where there is somebody's face on there you can identify with, someone's personality or what have you, was really important to us. You know, we wanted that to be a part of the show.
Yeah. I think one of the things that gets lost by a lot of people, I try and beat people over the head with it every single time, you know, a new bachelor or bachelorette is named and they're like, oh my God, he was so boring, or she, why'd they pick her over him? I'm like, you realize that these shows are made in casting, not the lead, but it's the contestants. There's one lead, for your show there was two, but for the most part on these dating shows, it's one person and 25 or 30. Those 25 or 30, the lead could be have the personality of a log, and the show could still be good, because if you have enough interesting contestants with backstories and or, you know, some people that are great in front of the camera that are better than others and can give great sound bites. That's what makes these shows, not who the lead is. It really doesn't matter who the lead is, to be honest with you. And I tell people that all the time, but they don't believe me.
Well, I think the network or the production company would have you say everybody's important.
Yeah, everybody's important.
And to a degree, you're right. You could have a lot of interesting characters around, but man, it just sure does pop a lot harder when you've got good characters from top to bottom. That's always our goal. I mean, our goal is to take on a casting and then to be able to watch the show once we finished our casting and like what we see. And that doesn't mean we got to like everybody, but we have to believe that we did our absolute best. And, like, you know, it's not rocket science. We're not brain surgeons here. Yeah. We've been at it for about 20 years. So we know a lot of the tricks of the trade. And we know what people are going to say to us to try to get on shows. And we know how to weed them out to try to get to the most authentic people possible. And to then try to get them onto a show, or at least let them get themselves onto a show. And hope that the production company agrees. And luckily on this one, Sally Ann Salsano and 495, we were all going after the same goal, which was, let's find some genuine people who are actually looking for love. And let's have a social experiment where the women think one's rich and one's not, and let's see what happens. And I think it's created an interesting conversation in America. I see people on social media talking about it. It's a popular show. It's not as large as The Bachelor did, but it's growing every single week. And I think it's a conversation that's that needs to be had again in 2022.
Yeah, I wanted to. I'm really enjoying the show. I'm glad that they brought it back. I was always curious, like I said, how could they bring it back in the same format as it was when it first started? And they didn't. They had to bring it back in this way, which I think is great. The relationship between Kurt and Steven is, I think the bromance adds to the popularity of the show and the why people seem to like it. But I wanted to leave you guys with one last thing. I wanted to ask you each a question, and it might be hard to pull these from your memory bank because you've been doing this for so long. But I'll first start with you, Damon. Is there a contestant that during casting, I mean, you obviously end up casting these people. Is there a contestant, though, during casting on any of the shows that you've done, one that sticks out to you where either or they were great in casting and they got on the show and it just didn't click, or somebody that you were maybe hesitant on during casting, still casted them, but then they turned out to be a dynamo in terms of their confessionals or ITMs?
Putting me on the spot,
I don't want to say that like you didn't like somebody or whatever, but there had to be somebody that really blew you up and were like, wow, they were better than I thought.
Okay, I have somebody. So we did a show called Marrying Million season 2. I think we did some support casting on season 1. We were working in conjunction with the production casting team, and we did that for, I don't know, a couple months or what have you. And I met this woman, Desiree, and she was really sweet and nice. And she said, you know, I have someone who I believe would be a great person for this. And his name was Rodney. And I met Rodney, and I just didn't believe them. I thought they were during the early parts of casting. So I met them through my casting associate, brought them forth to me. Spoke to them, and they were the type of people where I was like, this is too good to be true, the things they were telling me. And I don't know if you're familiar with that show at all, but
no.
It's Rodney and Desiree from Married Millions season 2. And they were amazing on the show. I mean, they were so good, they got a spinoff. So they surprised me. So that happens on occasion when you're like, this can't be right. These people are too good to be true. There's no way the things that they're saying to me are either they're very savvy to the casting world and know the right things to say, or they're just authentically that good. And I, you know, erred on the side of like, nah, they're not who they say they are. And they were exactly who they said they were. And then some, and they really surprised me. And I've had other people who I was would literally bet my left arm that they were going to be the stars of the show. And flopped, you know, for various reasons. So, you know, it goes both ways. But I think over the years of just doing it for so long, you sort of can anticipate. Like Caroline Campbell is a good example of someone who would have killed it on the show. And a little behind the scenes on her, she, we fly people out for finals. We want to meet them in person. The network wants to meet them before they put them on the show. And you know, which is a very standard practice in our business. And she came out and, you know, she had the whole room laughing the whole time. I mean, she kept us laughing the whole time. So this girl's a bona fide star. If she lasts a long time, she's a bona fide star. So at the end of the day, you know, that didn't work out, but we'll get her on a different show. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah. No, it did. And Jason, for you, why don't you pull one of those? Someone that you were maybe iffy on and then they got on the show and really blew up and you know, impress you more than you thought maybe they would.
Oh, definitely. For me, it's going to be Stephen McBee. I liked Stephen. I liked talking to him, but honestly, and our casting director, Chadwick Wilson, when he interviewed him, he came out of the room. We were in the office together and he came out and he goes, I think we just found our millionaire. And I was like, no way. Are you kidding? Because this was like week 3 of casting on a 6-month job. And I watched that guy. I watched his interview. I'm like, maybe not. But like, later on, I was more convinced that he was going to be great. You know, that we've seen a lot of millionaires, but he was willing to do as many interviews as we needed him to do, but he wasn't hungry. Like, you could tell he could take it or leave it. Like, if he wasn't pompous at all, he was just cool and nice. And I was sure he was going to go onto the show and he was going to play this part. But, like, I was very pleasantly surprised at just how genuine and cool and outgoing he was on the show. That blew me away. I mean, he is such a good interviewer. Like, on camera, when they're doing the OTF, so they're doing the confessional interviews, he's just great. He's great. He's a total natural. And it wasn't like that in the beginning, but it got there. And then when he got to the show, it was phenomenal. And I think that speaks a lot to the producing of the show and just making them comfortable on set as well. But Steven would have to be one of the number one people that I was surprised by.
Interesting. Yeah, it's this has been a great insight into just the casting world, because this is not something I'm definitely someone who's interested in the how the sausage is made. It's why I'm kind of interested in the spoiler aspect of The Bachelor and Bachelorette, and kind of the behind the scenes versus what we see on television, because we hear a lot of the same lines every season from these contestants. It's kind of the same thing. So it's like, I don't really care what they say on the show, because I know they don't really necessarily mean it. They know what they have to say. You know the end goal of The Bachelor, The Bachelorette is to get engaged at the end. And I think that's a lot of pressure. So everyone has to say the right things, because if you're what you really feel, like, you know what, I don't know if I'm really interested in getting engaged, then you have no chance of winning. So you immediately are taking yourself out of the competition. For Joe Millionaire, we don't even know what the end game is of this show. I have no idea. The show hasn't told us. And that's, I think that's the good part of this ride, is that we don't know what to expect. I don't know if Kurt wants to be engaged at the end, or Steven wants to be engaged, or they're just going to tell some woman, I want to date you still. Like, I don't know. So I think it's very interesting. And then plus the money aspect of, when do the women find out about who's the rich one, who isn't, and is it going to change their view of either one? So I think that's...
Yeah, how are the women going to react?
Yeah.
And by the way, Steve, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know when they're going to tell them. We don't know how they tell them. We don't know who they pick. We don't know. We're watching it the same way you are.
Yeah, and I think it's just really interesting. I'm fascinated by the behind the scenes about just how casting works and stuff like that. So, Jason, Damon, I really appreciate you guys coming on. I'm glad I was able to connect with you guys, and we'll definitely have you guys on in the future, continue the great work and great casting on some of our favorite shows. So,
awesome.
Take care of me. Take care of you guys.
Listen, right, thanks for the time. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the time. Tell everybody listening to the show to go check out our TikTok, our Instagram, all that, and to follow us, and they'll know about the castings first.
Yeah, Cornwell Casting on Twitter. It's just Cornwell Casting, right?
Yeah. At Cornwell Casting on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of them. We're everywhere. Just follow us and you'll hear first.
And if you listen to this interview, now you know exactly what you need to say to these guys in your interviews to get cast on a show. How about that?
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
You can try.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Damon. Really appreciate
it. Thanks, Steve.
You got it.
Thanks, buddy. Bye. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much to Jason and Damon for coming on and sharing that. Like I said, I think Michael Carroll, former Bachelor producer years ago, I'm talking early 2000s, and Temptation Island producer for the first few seasons, I think the first two seasons, he's the only person on the behind-the-scenes guy that I've ever had on the podcast, I think. Unless I'm missing out on somebody else. But just to hear their stories and hear what it takes to get on a reality TV show, especially a reality TV dating show, which they specialize in, and the casting job they did for Joe Millionaire and how extensive it was, and finding Kurt and finding Steven and finding the right women that they thought would fit this show. It's very, very interesting stuff. As you know from me, I'm always a guy that's much more interested in how the sausage is made than eating the sausage. That sounded so bizarre. But I've always been interested in the more behind the scenes stuff. It's why I've always been interested in the spoilers and giving you stuff that happened behind the scenes that isn't shown on television. So talking to these two guys was really, really eye-opening. And just, I hope you learned a lot of things from that, as I certainly did. So I really want to thank Jason and Damon for coming on and they will definitely be on in the future, I tell you that much. So thank you to them. Thank you all for listening. Please rate, subscribe, and review in Apple Podcasts. Very much appreciated. And we'll be back next week with yet another podcast. As I mentioned, I didn't mention it at the beginning of the podcast, but Temptation Island Season 4 starts March 16th. So that's basically, if The Bachelor has a one-night finale, it'll be 2 days after The Bachelor finale. If it has a two-night finale, it'll be the next night. So they're really waiting until after Bachelor is over now to start their dating show airing. It filmed in September, but and I know nothing other than what was posted. I saw the two-minute preview. Looks very juicy, very salacious, very Temptation Island-ish. And can't wait to start covering it, looking, you know, watching the episodes. And obviously, I'll try and get some coverage here and get some of the contestants on as the show is airing and whatnot. But we're still a month away from that. That starts March 16th on USA. So for Jason Cornwell and Damon Collazo, I'm Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week. See you.